If you're like me, then sometimes you will wonder what was behind some of the great songs that you love. You know, if you could sit down and with the person who wrote that song or who played that song and ask them, what were you thinking about when you wrote it? You know, what experience does it testify to? It would be really brilliant to do that. And if I could do that, I'd love Paul Simon to tell me what he was thinking about when he wrote Peace Like a River. Or I'd love Mark Cohn to explain to me what was behind the song From the Station. Or I'd like Annie Lennox to tell me what experience is behind the song Cold. Or I'd love Bruce Springsteen to explain to me what he was thinking about when he wrote Tougher Than the Rest. You probably have your own list, be very different from mine, okay? But it would be really interesting to know what was behind the song, what experience, you know, what they were going through at the time, what they saw, what they were actually talking about. And the Bible is full of songs. Songs from the lips of prophets, apostles, lovers, even warrior kings. And the book of the Psalms is a collection of songs. That's what it is. And for the most part, we have no idea what lay behind the song. We don't know the context. We don't know the experience. We don't even know the moment in which the song was written. But that is not true of Psalm 63. Psalm 63 comes in the middle of the second book of songs that make up the Psalms, okay? The Psalms are divided into five different collections of songs. And the second collection of songs in the Psalms are the songs between 42 and 72. And somewhere near the middle of that collection comes Psalm 63. And the editor, whoever the editor was, who collected up those songs and put them into the format in which we now have them in the Scriptures, the editor added a note at the beginning of Psalm 63 to explain to us the context in which it was written. And this is what he said. He said, a psalm of David, tells us who wrote it, when he was in the desert of Judah, tells us the moment behind the psalm. And what a moment to write a worship song. What the editor tells us there refers to a story which you can read in 2 Samuel chapters 15 and 16, which is a story of deceit and betrayal inside David's own family. David's son, one of David's sons, was Absalom, and Absalom fancied to be king. And to be king, he set about a political assassination. And he did it in the way that political assassinations always take place since time immemorial and right through to the present day. He undermined the authority of the king. He would stand at the gate of the city of Jerusalem, and people would come up to Jerusalem to have their cases judged in the royal court. And so they'd be coming up early in the day as the city gates were open, and then Absalom would be out there, and he would hail people as they came past. He was a very attractive-looking young man. Say, hey, good to see you. Why are you in Jerusalem today? And they would say, well, we've come up for judgment in the king's court about a really important issue to do with our farm or whatever it was. And Absalom would laugh, and he would say, fine chance you have. They'd say, why? Well, he said, you should see the queue up there. You'll be standing all day. You've got no chance of anybody paying the slightest bit of attention to your concerns. Quite frankly, nobody cares. But if I were king, it would be so different. And that's what he did. And over a period of time, he undermined the authority of his father. And over a period of time, some key people who were lieutenants of his father changed sides and began to side with Absalom. And this went on, and the pressure built up, and the pressure built up on David, until finally one day a messenger comes to David and he says this to him. He says, the hearts of the people of Israel are with Absalom. It was a truly devastating moment. David was a man of the heart. We know that about him. It's one of the reasons why he was a songwriter. His life was deeply emotional. He was emotional about a lot of things. He was emotional about his leadership. He loved Israel and he loved its people. He'd given himself to them in different ways throughout the years. And to hear that this man, whose heart was for the people of Israel, no longer had the hearts of the people he served, was a devastating moment. David had to flee. He realized he couldn't stay. Had to leave his home. He had to leave his city. He had to leave his throne behind. As he left the city of Jerusalem, he even had to leave the Ark of God behind. That piece of furniture, which was the symbol of the presence of God, David loved so much, had to be left behind. And he flees to the desert of Judah, desolate, arid, empty, dry. And it is in this moment of human devastation, this moment of loneliness and thirst in the desert, it is in this moment and in these circumstances that David writes a worship song about the longing of his heart. We've been looking in our series Face to Face this year, a few weeks before Pete was with us last Sunday, and then today and next Sunday, we're going to finish that series off. And we've been thinking about our response to God when God shows up. We started that series looking at fear and a few other kind of emotions. And today, we're going to look at this one that David talks about in Psalm, that he writes about in the midst of these devastating circumstances, his longing for God. And in the Psalm, you notice two things about that longing. First one is that longing stirs within David. The song has two key lines, and you'll not understand the song unless you get the fact that these are the two key lines in the psalm. The first of the key lines is this one. It comes in the very first verse where David says, I thirst for you. My whole being longs for you in a dry and parched land where there is no water. David was in the desert of Judah. There was no flowing water. Any water that they had had to be transported over a distance so that they could drink. They spent a fair bit of the time thirsty. And David realized that his human circumstances in the desert of Judah were a metaphor for his life. He was longing for things, longing for home, longing for friends, longing for the house of God. But he was far away from it in the desert, thirsty and hungry. And he realized that all these longings of his heart were pointers to the biggest and deepest longing of his life. Because more than he thirsted for water and more than he hungered for friends, he thirsted after God. And it was there in his life all the time. It keeps surfacing. You cannot read David's story without encountering this longing for God. When he was leaving Jerusalem to go down to the desert for the safety of himself and the members of his family, he's leaving the city. Zadok the priest comes out with the Ark of the Covenant, assuming that David would want to take the Ark of God's presence with him wherever he went. David said, no, it can't come with me. It needs to stay in Jerusalem. That's its proper place. I'm going to have to leave it behind. Thanks so much, Zadok, for your consideration, but you're going to have to take the ark back. And then he says this, take the ark of God back into the city. If I find favor in the Lord's eyes, he will bring me back and let me see it and his dwelling place again. What was David's real longing here? It wasn't so much to get back home. It wasn't so much to get back among his friends. It wasn't so much to get back even to where the Ark of the Covenant was, but to get back to where the presence of the Lord was in the sanctuary. His longing, the deepest longing for his life, longing that was below and deeper than all the other longings, was his longing for God. It surfaces when he faced Goliath. He comes down into the valley, visit his brothers, and he sees this Philistine champion challenging the armies of Israel, and he can't figure out why nobody's going to do something about it. We're just going to stand here like and let this guy come out here every day and do this? Is nobody going to face him? And nobody would. But what was it that annoyed David more than anything about this? Well, as he talks with his brothers, what does he say to them? He says, who is this uncircumcised Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God? It wasn't that this was an embarrassment for Israel. It wasn't that they were defying and creating problems for the Israelite army and the Israelite nation. Who is this uncircumcised Philistine to defy the armies of the living God? David's longing in those moments was not for his people, but for God, who was affronted by what was going on. And that longing in David's heart stirred again in the desert place where he writes this song, Psalm 63. And Psalm 63 is a song a lover could have written to his or her beloved, because the psalm essentially has just one message. Right through all its verses, it says essentially one thing. And you get it right in the very first words of the psalm. You, God, are my God. There is no one like you. There is no one more important to me. There is no one more significant in my life. There is no one I long for more than I long for you. You, God, are my God. Derek Kidner, in his commentary, says this: there may be other psalms that equal this outpouring of devotion. Few, if any, surpass it. In the desert place, David realized that the hunger and thirst and loneliness associated with where he was a metaphor for his life if he could not have the presence of God about him. Not only was it the case that David understood that his life circumstances had become a metaphor for his relationship with God, but they had also become a reminder of what he had lost. He says in the second verse, he says, I have seen you in the sanctuary and beheld your power and glory. He remembers moments of epiphany in the place of worship. He would go to worship God and God showed up. He was there. He touched his life. He answered a question that he needed an answer to. He filled his heart with love and with peace and with joy. He touched his body when it was weak and healed him in different kinds of ways. He had seen the glory of God in the worship of the sanctuary. But here was the thing. It was not in the sanctuary that he was aware of how much he longed for God. God was there. He took him for granted. He refound that longing for God in the desert place. You know, there is something in every human heart, in every single person sitting in this building today, in every single member of the human race, there's something in every one of us that longs for God. Deeper than all the other longings of our lives is a hunger and a thirst for Him. That's the way we're made. And isn't it why we love songs about this? I love this song of Matt Maher's. We sing, Lord, I come, I confess. Bowing here, I find my rest. Without you, I fall apart. You're the one who guides my heart, Lord. I need you. Oh, I need you. Every hour, I need you. My one defense, my righteousness. Oh, God, how I need you. That longing is in every human heart, but sometimes we only discover it's there in the barren place. I haven't been out on my bike much this last few months. It's far too wet and cold. Yeah, I'm a wimp. Fine, I admit it. So I've been on the bike and the turbo trainer in the garage. And I was on it one day, week before last, at lunchtime. I had an hour, so I thought I'll go and spin for an hour. So I got on the bike. And there's a strange arrangement in the manse in terms of the fact that the extractor fan in the kitchen over the cooker extracts into the garage. Now, how anybody thought that was a good idea, I'm not sure, because there's a door out of the kitchen into the garage. So you extract the cooking smells into the garage, and when you open the door, you let them back in again. It's a really clever kind of system. So anyway, that's the way it works. So I'm in the garage, on the bike, on the turbo. I'm about 45 minutes into a ride that's going to be about an hour or so when Hannah comes down to cook lunch, and she puts bacon on to make a bacon roll. And I didn't realize I was hungry until that moment. And as the extractor fan in the kitchen draws the smell of cooking bacon into the garage, I think, I need to stop right now. If I don't eat right now, I am going to die. I hadn't even realized I was hungry. I didn't actually. I finished it right. But that was how I felt at the time, all right? It wasn't until I was there at that moment I realized I'm hungry. And I was struck last weekend at Catalyst, you know, of the number of people I prayed with here last weekend who were coming for prayer because they had desert testimonies to tell. They were in a barren place right now and they were hungry and thirsty for God. David says, I thirst for you, I long for you, deeper than all the other longings of my life. The one thing that explains who I am is my longing for God. That's you. That's you. All the other longings of your life are metaphors, if you like, meant to draw you to the one big longing, deeper and more significant than them all, the longing for the presence of God himself. The longing stirs within us, sometimes in the barren place. Give thanks to God for the barren place that brings you back to him. But that longing that stirs is also a longing which expects. Because the second key line in the song comes in verse 5, in which David says this. He says, I will be fully satisfied as with the richest of foods. There is a deep, deep confidence in our longing for God. There's a deep confidence in us that when there is a longing in our spirit for him, then that is a longing that will be satisfied. We can have 1,000 other longings that will never be satisfied. You will never own that ridiculously large house, okay? You will never own that fabulously expensive car. You will never get that key top job that you aren't actually qualified for. Lots of the longings of your life will never be satisfied. But with this deepest longing in our spirit comes the confidence that those who long for God get satisfied. Years after David's desert experience, Jeremiah the prophet writes to the people of Israel going through a desert experience in Babylon. And speaking on behalf of God, he says this to them, you will seek me and find me when you seek me with all your heart. Longing is the currency which puts a value on the presence of God. Longing is the currency which puts a value on the presence of God. When we long for him, it becomes such a key thing in our lives that God responds to that longing. And so David's longing filled his life with a deep assurance. You could say that this was a morning psalm. And David expected by the evening to have an answer to the prayer of the psalm, that his longing for God would be satisfied. I will be satisfied, he says. But how could this be when his life was in danger every waking moment? Where did this assurance, this deep conviction come from that even though he had to be guarded 24/7, that by day and by night he was wondering were the troops loyal to Absalom going to come over the top of the hill and that would be the end. Even though that was the case, he had this assurance. And it's there in the psalm. Psalm verse 6 says this, on my bed I remember you. I think of you in the watches of the night. Because you are my help, I sing in the shadow of your wings. The darkness of the night held no fear for David. He's lying awake at night. And you know how if you're lying awake at night worrying about something, it seems much worse at 4 o'clock in the morning than it does at the breakfast table the next day. Why is that? There's something about the nighttime hours that seem to exaggerate and deepen every fear and every concern and worry that we have. And David is awake in the watches of the night, but he's not afraid. The watches of the night have become for him a place of worship. How so? Because David testifies in those words that the darkness in David's life was not darkness. It was the shadow of the wings of the Lord himself. See the difference between those two things? If you've ever had a child in a buggy, two of you, especially the buggy when they get old enough to be able to face forwards and you're wheeling them down the street and it's a bright sunny day and the sun is shining in the eyes of the child. And sometimes it's possible to do that clever thing if you've got two of you, one pushing the pram and the other person able to walk, maybe just a step or two further in front so that your body throws a shadow on the pram and the little one can open their eyes and enjoy the environment that they're in because they are in the shadow of your presence. David said, that's what the darkness in my life is. The darkness in my life is not darkness. The darkness in my life is the shadow cast upon my life by the presence of God, which means that even in the darkness, I am safe. Not only so, but David's situation was not altered by the circumstances in which he found himself. He expresses his trust in the very final verse of the psalm in these words. He says, but the king will rejoice in God. The king, he didn't look like a king right now. Absalom looked like a king right now. Absalom was in Jerusalem occupying David's palace, commanding David's army, sitting on David's throne, and sleeping with David's concubines. But for all of that, Absalom was not and never would be the king of Israel. Says who? Says the Lord, who had not given David permission to lay down the mandate that he had placed upon his shoulders all those years ago when he sent the prophet Samuel to David's home to anoint him as the next king of Israel. David was the king, even though it looked like it was Absalom. And it was his longing after the Lord that made that opinion of God of greater significance than the opinion of the people of Israel whose hearts David had lost. It would have been easy for David to think, I've lost the nation. I'm toast. But he hadn't lost the heart of God. And right now in David's life, the opinion of God was much more significant to him than was the opinion of the totality of the people of his nation because of the longing of his heart for God. When Pete was here last Sunday, I gave him a lift up in the afternoon from Central up to here to do the 6:30 service. We were chatting about cars on the way up, and he said to me that he and his wife usually bought either Japanese or German cars because he does an awful lot of driving around, and he had found with experience that they were the most reliable cars. And he said, normally when it came to changing the car, his wife, Sammy, never took any part in it. She wasn't interested in cars, so he usually picked the car. But on one occasion when they came up to the time when it was time to change the car, Sammy said to him, she said, I think we should buy a French car this time. So Pete was quite taken aback at this because she'd never had any interest in cars before. And as you figured out from, he listened to him last weekend, they're a really tight couple and close together. And so he thought, well, if Sammy fancies a French car, let's have a look. So they had a look around. They bought a French car. It was a complete disaster. And the problem was they were locked into it for 3 or 4 years, and everything on it that could break did break, and the electrics, especially French cars, electrics, it didn't really work that well. So they had lots of problems with the cars. And about 3 or 4 months into this experience with the French car, he thought one day he would ask Sammy why she had thought about buying the car. So he said, dear, what was it that made you think about this car, this French car? And she said, well, I like French wine. And I like French cheese. And I like French fashion. In other words, it had nothing whatsoever got to do with the car. But they had gone ahead and bought the car because he valued her opinion above what the magazines would have told him if he'd bothered to read the reviews before he bought it, because his wife meant more to him, because there is a longing in his heart for her. And like two people in love, you want, because you long for that person to be blessed and to have joy with that person, to, if possible, involve them and engage them and do the things that they want to do. That's why the Lord's opinion was of more value to David than the opinion of the majority of his nation. It just so happens the Lord's opinions make more sense than your wife's opinion might make on the next car you should buy, or possibly your husband if you're in one of those relationships, which is the other way around. David listened to what God said. God still called him king, because God had not given him permission yet to lay that down. And that's the challenge before us. There are many longings in our lives. And all those longings are metaphors, if you like, of a much deeper longing that is often unrecognized. For much of the time that we live is disregarded or unsuspected. But underneath, deeper than, far, far deeper than all those other longings of our hearts in every single human life, is a longing for the presence of God. And in David's case, that longing arises in the desert place, and maybe that's exactly where you are right now. Or some people were that I prayed with in church last Sunday. And what you really need more than anything else right now is for God to show his hand in your life. Show up right now. And you know what? Along with that deep, deep inner longing for God, for his glory, his forgiveness, his grace, his presence in our lives, comes a deep, deep confident assurance that those who long for God get satisfied. You will seek me, and you will find me when you seek me with all your heart. That's what he said. And so this is an opportunity. This is a moment when we can do that. And the offering's going to come in a moment or two. We're going to pick that up quietly, and the band are going to come and sing to us while we do so. And then after that, when the offering comes forward, I'm going to give you an opportunity to respond to this moment. That if you are in that desert place and you recognize, maybe for the first time ever in your life, that the unsatisfied deepest longing of your heart is to know God, then this is a moment to trust him. Open up your heart to him. If you've been a Christian for a long time, but things have been dry and desperate for a long time, this is a moment, this is an opportunity. With the confident assurance that we have, that when we long for him, he shows up to satisfy that longing. And when the offering comes forward, I'm going to give you a chance to respond to that. So just quietly, as we bring the offering to God, listen to the song the band are going to sing, and then I'm going to give you a chance to respond.